हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, chapter 11, part 3, Abhideya, chapters 11 through 16, Riti. According to Dasamultattva, pure devotional service is the living entity's occupation and means. In chapters 11 through 16, the author describes the process for attaining the supreme goal. Chapter 11 presents an analysis of the process of devotional service. Chapter 12 describes devotional service in practice, sadhana bhakti. Chapter 13 describes devotional service executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Chapters 14 and 15 analyze the unfavorable and favorable conditions for bhakti. Chapter 16 describes the gradual manifestation of bhava. Bhava's here. Here's bhava, there's bhava. Yeah, so what it's saying here is that we've heard the sambandhic yan. So from that, then we contemplate that, remove the doubts. Accepting that, then we have an understanding, right? So you have to apply that understanding. That's called abhideya. But as you mentioned, that the words themselves, there's a potency that makes it so we can understand. They're called the abhida shakti. So that abhida shakti, that direct understanding, that directness is pointing to service to Krishna. It's all about devotional service to Krishna. So, following the directions of scriptures in pursuance of pleasing Krishna, that's abhideya. So that's then what we're talking about here. This is the direct meaning of the scriptures, to serve the Lord. Applying that, that's called abhideya.
There is no possibility the doubt has been cleared before.
It means that's what Shravana is for, is clearing the doubt. But devotional service is so nice that even wherever we've cleared doubts, we can work. And where we haven't cleared doubts, we won't generally work. And so then it's just a matter, as we go, we are constantly hearing and associating with the devotees. So then gradually all aspects of life, then all the doubts are cleared. And by doing devotional service, the heart becomes purified. So many times just doubts go away on their own. You don't even require an intellectual kind of a process. Yeah. Shri Krishna, chapter 11, analysis of the process, abhideya vichar, Shri Krishna to Uddhava, Srimad Bhagavatam 9.9.29 and 9.26. After many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life, which, although temporary, afford one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should immediately endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life and not fall down into the cycle of repeated birth and death. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most abominable species of life, whereas Krishna consciousness is only possible for a human being. Right, so that's the point, is that all species of life, they can engage themselves in sense gratification. But the problem is only in human life can you engage in Krishna consciousness, so that's why we should focus there. Does that make sense? You know, leave Krishna consciousness for, you know, some other life. I mean, leave sense gratification for another life. This life, use it for Krishna consciousness. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. Besides these three, there is absolutely no other means of elevation. So that, you know, and this is Krishna speaking, so it's an absolute statement. There is no other means of elevation. You can keep yourself in that particular absorption in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending that matches some particular species of life or a combination. But to advance and move forward, you can only do it through these three. Right? So karma on its own will only take you to the heavenly planets. Jnana on its own will only take you to liberation. While bhakti will take you to prema. Right? So, therefore, then the wise person engages the aspects of karma and jnana in the service of devotion, in pursuance of devotion. Then you get karma yoga and jnana yoga. So then they move forward very nicely. But that's all there is. There isn't any other path. You can't create a path. You can't make it up. So these contemporary ideas of just being nice and good and social and all these things, they won't elevate anybody. Because would we say, let's just take for example, in general, you kind of find the contemporary situation isn't actually that ideal. You can think back and think, oh, before, you know, people were more personal, people were more this and that, you know. I remember these... As kids, you know, you went out from your house and you went out and you played with the other kids in the street in front of the house. You know, just right out there. All the kids came out, you ran around, cars come by, they're going to be careful. They don't come by so often. Right? You know, like that. And the parents know. They can just look out the window, see the kids are there. They can all hear something, someone screams or cries, and they all know they go out. But otherwise, it's there. But nowadays, you know,
parents are there too.
Yeah, parents are there too. Yes, there's that's a very, very, you know, the cliche. There were two parents, right? You know, like that. And then, So that's the whole point. So you can say, yes, it was better before. So this whole idea of that political correct and bringing it up and bringing it nice and doing that and make everything perfect, that's been around for a long time, right? Does that make sense? Just focusing on it in general, then, you know, the hippies and, the bohemians and all that started that back in the, you know, 50s and like this. So it's been 70 years. Where is it? Where's the elevation? What are you saying like that? You understand? And then if we want to talk New Age, just to deal with it because it was so being used so much, the phrase New Age was coined in the 1930s to define it. Otherwise, before it was Orientalism or this or that. So that means in the Western culture, it's been there since back in the 1700s. Where's the improvement? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it doesn't work. These other paths don't work. You make something up. Only karma, jnana, and bhakti work. They will elevate you. It's just how far. So the intelligent person sense becoming God conscious and giving up on the sense gratification, then is there. Then the path of bhakti is the best. Jnana will work to give up sense gratification, but it won't permanently solve this problem. Only bhakti will. And karma, that's just going to further the problem. But it'll be a nice problem now instead of a not nice problem. But problem nonetheless. Is that? Chamasarishi to Maharaj Nimi, 11.5, from 11.5. Sri Chamasa said, each of the four social orders, headed by the Brahmins, was born through different combinations of the modes of nature. From the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord in His universal form. Thus the four spiritual orders were also generated. Right? So it's based on the Lord. That's very important. That's what's not seen, is that we'll take it that the Varnashram is mundane. But the point is it's generated from the body of the Lord in the universal form. So when we see all that connected to the Lord, then there's not a problem. So then one can engage any of that aspect. Because you see, it comes from there. So the feet, what do? They carry things around. The thighs do this, the arms do this, the head does this. If any of the members of the four varnas and ashrams fail to worship or intentionally disrespect the personality of Godhead, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their position into a hellish state of life. So even they're following very nicely the Brahminical standard. If they disrespect the Lord, then they'll fall down from their position. Because it's the Lord that they're dealing with. The position is that of the universal form. You have to know what you're doing within that. It's all Krishna. Yes.
Like from this we can also understand how karma and jnana are just the tools. Because according to your position, it keeps changing. But okay. The bhakti never changes.
Yes, nice. Yes. Does that make sense?
He couldn't hear.
He was saying is that by this understanding, this instruction, you can also understand that karma and jnana, they're changeable, but bhakti is the fixed one. Because according to whatever you are within varna and ashram, the karmas will change. The knowledge changes. But bhakti remains the same for all of them. So it's actually the higher principle. Like that. So it's just a matter of understanding what you're working with and then applying that in your position.
It's also interesting that Srila Rupa Goswami mentioned 64 angas of devotion. He doesn't mention Varnashrama. After that, however, he comments that Varnashrama is in support of those.
Yes, yes.
And the modern civilization is not.
He says that.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he himself says that. Or
no, whatever, because Manu mentions modern.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking, you know, right at the beginning of time. So, modern basically means non-Vedic. That's all it means.
Yeah.
You can use modern, you can use contemporary, like that. You know, because even saying modern, some people who are into the social context, because they use modern as a designation, so then we're in post-modern, so then, and they haven't thought of a new name, you know, because modern's quite a good name, you know. So if you use contemporary, then you know, okay, like this, you know, it just means what's going on now. But modern, so when you say secular, that just means the modern, what's going on. Now, if the secular is engaged in the varnashram, which is engaged in devotional service, it works very nicely. If you take the secular and directly engage it in devotional service, it will be purified. It's devotion. But the only difficulty is the secular, depending upon what your secular state is, might be in passionate ignorance. It's not as ideal to engage. That's why you take the secular, bring it up to the standard of varnashram, that's engaged in the Lord's service. So it's just a matter of the quality of tools. Just like you can get a very nice high-grade pot to cook in, or we can just save those, you know, whatever it is, those, how many would it be, the like 2-liter or 3-liter tomato sauce tins, you know, just cut the top off and keep that as a pot. You know, and as long as you're boiling water, it's great. But if you know, anything else, you start having a problem. Right? But it can be used, but the point is why not upgrade to a regular pot and use that to cook for Krishna? But we're saying, no, why we're making such designations on that? That's such pot consciousness, you know, external pot consciousness, you know. Why you're saying that this nice, you know, high-grade stainless steel pot is so much better than this, you know, funky tin, you know, tomato sauce, you know, can, you know. And so what? We haven't taken the label off either, and it's kind of gotten stuck on there and partly burnt and turned black. But, you know, why you're making these designations? Why you're being so external? Why can't you be transcendental and Krishna conscious? Right? So it's just mundane talk. That's the meaning of modern. Is that we're using the philosophy only because the philosophy will get something done for us. Because logically it makes no sense. So we try to use philosophy to make our nonsensical stuff make sense. Seem to make sense. It sounds good. But that's the whole point, is as soon as we take it out of the personal with individual interactions with people into obviously dead matter, immediately the example is so crystal clear. But as soon as we transfer that back into our bodily situation and relationships, again the attachment takes over and it becomes muddled. So that's the interesting fun. So that's why jnana uses that. It always takes it out to that. Because then it's very clear. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sri Krishna to Uddhava. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:11-10. If on earth one performs sacrifice for the satisfaction of the demigods, he goes to the heavenly planets, where, just like a demigod, he enjoys all of the heavenly pleasures he has earned by his performances. Until his pious results are used up, the performer of sacrifice enjoys life in the heavenly planets. When the pious results are exhausted, however, he falls down from the pleasure gardens of heaven, being moved against the desire, his desire, by the force of eternal time. So it's not that you won't suffer. You'll suffer. It's just that it may come a little later. Right? Like that. If a human being is engaged in sinful, irreligious activities, either because of bad association or because of his failure to control his senses, then such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desires. He thus becomes miserly towards others, greedy and always anxious to exploit the bodies of women. So this is the difficulty. If you're not following the Vedic, you're not following the pious, then all these bad qualities will develop. Even though you're using nice language and talking about nice ideas, these bad qualities will develop because they're not uplifting. Because it says only these three Vedic paths are uplifting. Other paths are not uplifting. Right? Does that make sense? So even if we take in the Western, those things that we would consider elevating, if you look at them, traditionally they're connected back to religion. Right? That's where they are. Because if you look at them on another thing, like we say, don't steal. Right? That goes back to the Ten Commandments. So then you're not supposed to take things from others. All right? What if we look at it from the economic point of view? Right? If I can get the thing first or block the other person from getting it, then I get the profit, then that's considered good. Or on the political platform, we as a country go into another country, take all their stuff and come back. It's good. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that only the religious there, that there's something there that you could say, because that's connected with this path of, you know, karma, jnana, and bhakti. But when you deal on the political, economic, you know, justice, you know, social, all these things, they will not be elevating. Right? Does that make sense? That's just what it's supposed to be. I mean, you look at it, it was supposed to be a nice thing. Now, let's say you have this society, everybody's equal, everybody has the same opportunity, everyone gets the same facility and benefit, and as you require, you get, you know, how you say, as you work, you get your facility. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's the exact definition of communism. How did that work out? Right? So that's the problem, is that once you take these things that seem that are coming from the religious platform, but then apply them on these other platforms without, according to Shastra, right? Then they'll only develop bad qualities. Krishna's saying it here. Remember, this is Krishna speaking. Right?
We can only elevate or degrade.
Yes.
No maintenance.
Yeah, there's no maintenance. It's just like a ball. It's either going up or coming down. It's not there. Yes?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that one comes to devotional service after accumulating pious credit and misfortune previously.
Yes.
Does that mean that pious credit can only be accrued within the Varnashram system?
No, even if you're out, it means if you're following the rule of Varnashram, whether you know it or not, you'll get benefit. If you know, you'll get more. If you don't know, you'll get less, but you'll get benefit. But the point is it's based on the Veda. So the Veda is describing what karma is, right, or jnana. And so if one follows that knowingly or unknowingly, then one will get benefit. But what it's talking here is that it comes to devotional service by piety. That means devotional piety. It does it. Material piety will never generate bhakti like that. So that means that they have performed devotional activities in their previous lives by coming in contact with the devotees in devotional service. Just like that guy who walks to his office every day by that Harinam party, you know, down at Times Square. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. That everybody, a little bit. At some point, the guy's got to come over. What are you guys doing? What's with the bed sheets? What's with, you know... He has to ask. So he's just something there, or he might come by and what's going on, might come to the temple, might come to a program. Like that. So it starts to accumulate. So over many lives, this accumulates. So it depends on the individual. Someone can do it much quicker. Someone will take much slower. It just depends upon their interest.
So material piety doesn't lead anywhere.
Doesn't lead anywhere. That's the whole point. It leads you back to here. You know, it's just like you do impiety, you come back here. You know, that's the esoteric meaning of the infinity. You keep coming, going, come back, going, come back. You know, it just goes on, therefore, anadi. So we're only talking about it because it's superior tools. For us, Varnashram is just a superior social tool. It works because you're trying to cooperate with the devotees and with the material energy in serving the Lord. So Varnashram accommodates that very nicely, while any other system does not. Say the modern system of how much they exploit everything else. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like even in the modern, you've got first world, second world, third world, you know, I think on down to fifth world, like that. And so then the problem is we can say is, oh, it's just a natural thing, but first world's making money off of the others. That's how it works. That's why they're first world. You know? And that first world, it will be just whoever happens to be good at it. Because as it is now, the first world is starting to shift. Who's got the money and stuff like that. You know? But it is this. Some say, oh, it'll never happen, but I think it's called brick. Like that. That it's shifting that direction. Like that. So it's just the others, they've had their time. You know, it's just a matter of piety, and then it's gone. Like, you know, Rome at one point was the most powerful. And now, then, you know, great shoes, nice pasta. Okay, make a nice car. You know, at least a Ferrari. Forget the Fiat. But, you know, and that's it. So that's the whole thing, from controlling the, you know, Western world to, you know, yeah. So that's how it works. The modes of nature, everything comes out in the Bhumi Gita. She laughs about this, that they come out, they march around. You know, all that land that Caesar and all that went out, made such a thing and all that. Now they're all something else in a little dinky place called Italy. You know? So that's the whole thing. It just keeps changing hands. And they come up, I'm the lord of this piece of land, and then the next guy comes along. So that's the difficulty, is that the material piety will not gain anything other than you get some benefit, and when the credit runs out from that, you'll come right back to where you were. Exact spot. Same, you do sinful, you go down, you'll come back right to the same spot, because it's free will. Now what you... Okay, with your free will, you did this. Now what happens? From that, then you come back to that place. You know, it's just like you're at home. You go out, you do lots of work, make lots of money, then you go on a holiday. And then when the money runs out, where do you go? Back home. Right? You know, at the same time, as you're there and you do something wrong and you get sent off to jail or prison and that, when the time's up, where do you go? Back home.
If you still have one.
Yeah, if you still have one, that's another thing. That's, you know, that's the whole point. At least you'll go and stay in the same neighborhood, right? Does that make sense? So that's how it just goes. So unless you're elevating yourself there to a higher consciousness, you know, so gradually they'll move through karma and get up to jnana, gradually through like this. So bhakti is, that's the quick path. The others is so slow. Like that. So bhakti then, the benefits of karma and jnana, you get them both with the same effort. It's just a matter of being aware and using those tools. Like, if I'm going to cook in the kitchen and it takes me 20 minutes to cook the preparation, it's going to take me 20 minutes whether I use a good pot or a bad pot. But the point is if I use a good pot, I get a good good results. You know, and so it's a nice offering to Krishna. And if I use the tomato tin, then I won't get as good a result. But, you know, that's what you have to offer Krishna. So that's why the acharyas recommend Varnashram. Only for the purpose it gets better, nicer results for Krishna. You know, and since people talk about results, then why not use the system that gives the results? You know? But you know, it's like in the Bhagavatam, you hear people that are poor, it's because they choose to live that lifestyle. Right? So, you know.
Yeah. So, like in communism time, the government also encouraged people to cultivate good qualities.
Yes.
Like selflessness, and love others.
And then how did that work
why
out?
It didn't work.
Because it's not based on the Vedic principles, so it can't work. That's the point. Is qualities are simply tools. So like you have the body, right? So if you don't use the body for Krishna, you won't get a good result. It's the same way qualities. You don't use it for Krishna, you won't get a good result. Does that make sense? Because we have to remember, it's God's world. And he makes the rules. You follow the rules, it works. You don't follow the rules, it won't work. Does that make sense?
The quality itself should work.
Just like the body should work. What's your purpose in using the quality? You want to be nice to people. What is your purpose in being nice to people?
So according to the communism, that the whole society will become flourish and everybody becomes
flourish. Happy. Okay, so therefore I'm being nice for economic development, right? That's why you're being nice. So is it actually for? So it's not about the people, it's not about the community. It's just about economics. So now the problem comes up is that as economically you develop, what happens to those qualities? So what's the cultivation of good qualities when you're filthy, stinking rich? Is there something? Is there a talk about it? No, the point is when you become rich, everything's perfect. You'll enjoy, you're on top of the world, everything's fabulous. So they don't even talk about good quality. You're only talking about good qualities so that you become rich. But there's no talk of good qualities when you are rich. You understand? you know what I'm saying? So therefore, they're only using the good qualities as a tool to get their goal. So we're talking the same thing, but our goal is prema. Not just becoming, you know, stinky, smelly, rich. Does that make sense?
Yeah, these things are more practical. Right?
Practical, but then the thing is ultimately, where does it get you? Does Confucianism talk being good?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I think, I don't know exactly what it was, but you go back some time. I'm not sure if it wasn't at the time of Chow Chow.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a little bit of a civil war there amongst the kingdoms.
Yeah,
how many people?
States.
Yeah, how many people died?
Millions.
Yeah, I think it was around 70 to 100 million.
Wow. Yeah.
So, even though they're cultivating good qualities, that unless you're cultivating connection with God consciousness, you can't regularly apply them. You can't be consistent in application. So that's it. Is the karma will be, he'll apply good qualities until he gets what he wants. Then he just enjoys. The jnani, because he's giving up enjoyment, can take it a little bit further. But once he comes to the liberated platform, he gives those qualities up. Only the devotee can take them all the way through into bhakti and continue to use them. Like that. So therefore, yes, good qualities are of value, but only the devotee can take full advantage. The other systems, they'll always. And if you make up the system of how you apply good qualities, then it will be very obviously, you know, very, how you say, meager in its results. Is that, yeah. So that's what Krishna's saying here, is that therefore, the person is engaged in sinful, irreligious activities, either because of bad association, because of failure to control his senses, when such a person will certainly develop a personality full of material desires. Right? Thus, he becomes miserly towards others, greedy and always anxious to exploit the bodies of women. So, as we move up in the economic circles, then we see these become the standard. They're miserly towards others, they're greedy, and they exploit the bodies of women. It's just standard. It means if you don't see, that's how do you know they're rich? Because of these three.
Yes.
No? So that's the problem. There's only devotional service will make it. So especially if you use good qualities based on irreligious, then this is going to come up very obviously. Now you see within the Vedic, they perform pious and that Yudhishthira you don't see with these things. So many other great personalities, you don't see these things. It may be there in the background. You see the touch with Yayati, but that was more to remove the desires. But he only followed the piety, and from that he got the understanding there's no benefit to material desire. So that's the purpose of karma, is that you understand there's no benefit to karma. And from gyan, the benefit is you've given up, you know, it's an easier way to give up the material, but at the same time as you understand there's nothing there. You know, it means you taste eternity, but the point is that that's all there is. The soul is beyond that. You know what I'm saying? It means that the materialist is tasting eternally at all kinds of moments. Wherever their values are, that's where they're tasting it. But it's only temporary in that. So the person liberated, it's a little bit longer. But the point is it doesn't address the needs of the soul. Therefore, bhakti is the only thing that goes beyond all these. All the benefits that you get in all the others, you've gotten in that, and the ultimate benefit is there. So, yes.
I also understand that consistency in bhakti is because the means and the goal is the same, whereas in any other process, they are completely different.
Good point. Does that make sense? Yeah, it means you're using the means, let's say, of making money, right, and being nice to people, right? I think they call it a crocodile grin. You know, the businessmen, they smile at each other, but you know, if they could, they, you know, stab each other in the back. But for right now, until the deal's made and all that, until you're strong, then you smile, right? So the process is one thing, but the result is something else. And when you get to the result, you give up the process. But in bhakti sense, devotional service is the process, and devotional service is the result. Like that, you continue. It continues. That's a very nice point. And that Sambandha relates at all the levels. So it's the only consistent method. In such a degraded body, he unfortunately continues to perform inauspicious activities that greatly increase his future unhappiness. And therefore he again accepts a similar body. What possible happiness can there be for one who engages in activities inevitably terminating in death? In all planetary systems, from the heavenly to the hellish, and for all of the great demigods who live for 1,000 yuga cycles, there is fear of me in my form of time. Even Brahma, who possesses the supreme lifespan of 31 trillion 40 billion years, is also afraid of me. Because death is still going to come. It just may be a little later than it does for us, but it's coming. Right, in other words, what do you call it? Stark was on to something. Right? The material senses create material activities, either pious or sinful. And the modes of nature set the senses into motion. The living entity, being fully engaged by the material senses and modes of nature, experiences the various results of fruitive work. Right, so here you see a combination of that description of this morning, where he is the agent, but at the same time he's not independent. Right? As long as the living entity thinks that the modes of nature have separate existences, it will be obliged to take birth in many different forms and will experience varieties of material existence. Therefore, the living entity remains completely dependent on fruitive activities under the modes of nature. Right? Because he thinks he's himself, then there's the modes. But the point is what we call ourselves is governed by the modes. The soul is separate. Right? We're taking it, no, this is us. And then there's the modes. and they're giving us problem. But no, we're the soul, we're separate, and the modes and the body and the mind, that's all working together. That makes sense? So it's a different perspective that you look. So as long as you see that it's separate than that. Also, when you see that, okay, there's just goodness and that will like that, and there's no passion or ignorance, but the point is goodness includes passion or ignorance. They're all constantly fighting for supremacy. That's just what they do. Right? Anyways, how do you keep yourself busy for eternity unless you have a bit of a... Yes?
Could you please give an example of how someone may see the modes as separate from them?
I'm here doing like that, and then the modes, you know, adjusted, and then now I'm getting difficulty. But why is that difficulty? Because of our attachments. So in other words, the modes, the body, all these things, they just function together. We're separate. The soul. Right? Also, yes, somebody's situated in goodness, then that's good, that's nice. See all these people who come to the yoga studio, they're more in goodness, they're really good people and all that. All the other people, they're, you know, we don't bother with them. So we'll help them, situate them in goodness and all this and that. And passion ignorance is there. Why are they at the yoga studio? Are they there for God consciousness? Or are they there to get rid of that, you know, 2 kilos of fat so then they look better and they can fit into that, you know, whatever it is, that dress that they want to fit into or stuff like that. So it's purely the mode of passion. And it's based on that I'm the body, so ignorance. So even though it's very nice and peaceful and, you know, nice pictures on the wall, all the nice ones with all the, you know, ladies in the long flowing dresses and, what do you call it, the daffodil, you know, garland in their hair and the hair flowing and the wings and star and like that. Did we miss anything? Not at all, yeah, okay.
Slim.
Huh? Slim, yeah, like that. Always slim, like that. Yeah, and it's a midi, right? You know, it's always got to show the feet, the bare feet, you know, because it's going through the pastures and everything like that. Yeah. So it's you know, and you go to every yoga center, they're all the same. So that's the thing, these modes are there. So that's the point, is we think it's, oh, it's different. So it's the soul that's different. The modes, they're all the same. They all work together. If there's one's there, the others are there. That's why Varnashram is good, because it's goodness, but it's predominantly goodness. It doesn't mean passion and ignorance aren't there. So only when we use it for Krishna, then it's pure goodness. So that's why Daiva Varnashram, we use Daiva Varnashram. We're not interested in Varnashram. So that's the problem. We either take devotional service without Varnashram, so we leave the Daiva Varnashram, or if we're interested in Varnashram, where we propagate Varnashram, we just propagate Varnashram, forget the Daiva.
Yes.
So it's either Daiva or Varnashram, never together.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's a difficulty. You know, so the amount of Varnashram we use is how much is useful in Krishna consciousness. More than that, we don't use. You're not obliged to use more than that. Does that make sense? So we cook, we offer to Krishna. That's all we're obliged to do. So from Varnashram, that you cook according to the standards, goodness and this and that, and then you offer things and all that, that's what we do. We don't have to then go out and do the Balidan and go around the house and put rice at, you know, like at 30 different places around the house to worship all the demigods and the different personalities. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like that. You know, it's like for the Shraddha, then we do the, you know, invite the devotees, have a kirtan, discuss about this and that, cook some prasad, feed the devotees. At the end, we, you know, put a plate for who departed, and Hari Bol, and that's it. We never do it again. Like that. It's like that. While the others, they have to, you know, on the regular, you know, for the first year, every month on the TT, and then after that, every year, once a time. They have to do, and so many rules. Manu has 12 chapters. The first chapter is opening and telling, you know, basically how you follow Varnashram, how it's come from the Lord. The last one is how you can interpret it and see it in connection with the Supreme. Right? Like that. So that's already 2 chapters gone. Right? Then you can say 3 chapters is dealing with the kings, what they do. Okay, so now we're down to 7. Then there's 1 for if you can follow your duties nicely, or if you can't, you know, like that. Then that's now 6. Then 1 on kids, you know, the quality of children and inheritance and all that. like that, then you're going to have one on sannyas and varanashram, then one that basically deals with brahmacharis, so then three on grihastha. Of the grihastha, one of those is Shraddha rites. Mm-hmm. One full chapter. So that means it takes up one third of all the rules for grihasthas. So that we only do that much for a Shraddha rite. We've been saved from one chapter of Manu. Right? And so when it says we don't care for the, that's how we don't. We fall off this. But then if we take doing the Shraddha rite, that's all smarta stuff. Anyone who says that doesn't even know what a smarta is. Like if we made a lineup, they wouldn't be able to point out that's a smarta. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so the whole point is it's the volume of rules is very great. And so then Krishna is very kind. He cuts it down. So Daiva Varnashram is how much of those are necessary. So in the 11th canto, Krishna explains all that. It's explained throughout, but he very clearly says it there. So the lifestyle that Srila Prabhupada's given us, that's Daiva Varnashram. What he talks about in his books, that's Daiva Varnashram. That's all we have to do. Right. Because they were saying, oh, that's so ritualistic. That's not ritualistic. Ritualistic is, you know, you want to see ritual. Right? Does that make sense? You know how sometimes when you're serving prasad and you pick it up and you're trying to figure out what it is, you either smell it or shake it a bit? Mm-hmm. Either of those makes the whole Shraddha rite useless. And that's just two of the rules. Right? Think one chapter. Right. So that's the thing. So as a general thing, you don't do that. You know, I think it was one of the devotees smelled something, you know, trying to figure out. Probably said, "What's that?" And they went to smell it. Probably says, "Animals use smell to figure out what things are. Humans use their eyes and intelligence. You look at it and figure it out." Okay. You know, so the thing is these are human. So human life engages in Krishna service, and it's a natural thing since Krishna's favorite pastimes are his human pastimes. So therefore, you know, it's not a bad thing to get used to human pastimes since that's probably what you're going to be doing eternally, right? So it's not a bad thing. Is that okay? Yeah. The conditioned soul, where was it?
Yes.
Yeah. Conditioned soul who remains dependent on fruitive activities under the material modes of nature will continue to fear me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, since I impose the results of one's fruitive activities. Those who accept the material concept of life, taking the variegatedness of the modes of nature to be factual. Mm-hmm. Devote themselves to material enjoyment and are therefore always absorbed in lamentation and grief. Because if you absorb yourself in the modes of nature, then you'll always suffer. Because it never works out how you want. So the whole point is bhakti means giving this mentality up. Not the activities, if they're recommended. Like it says, there's three processes of elevation. Those three, we will engage in Krishna's service. Right? Bhakti means it's pure. And karma and jnana means this, karma misra, jnana misra. Right, karma yoga and jnana yoga. But we're using those for Krishna. But if we're not using those, then the problem comes up is that then we will be engaged in, you know, in fruitive activities and karma, and we will suffer. That's why we're suffering now, because of that. So if we're doing devotional service and saying, but I'm still suffering, it's not because of the bhakti, it's because of what's left of karma and jnana. Right? So if you understand that, then think how bad it would be if you weren't doing bhakti. Look at it that way. You know. Could be worse. Uddhava to Krishna, 11th canto, 29th chapter. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, I fear that the method of yoga described by you is very difficult for one who cannot control the mind, like in Gita. Right? Therefore, please explain to me, in simple terms, how someone can more easily execute it." Right? Because these processes, the technical points of yoga and jnana and karma, are very elaborate. Therefore, we only follow them in connection with bhakti, because bhakti is something that everybody can follow. Right? So that's the prominence. And then accordingly, according to your nature, you add in karma and jnana and engage that according to what nature you have. So it doesn't make it better on the spiritual platform, but it makes a distinction on the external, on the material platform. Right? Because of the area where they work, the Brahmins then are the head of society. Then where they work, then the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas and the Shudras, like that. Then it works. Does that make sense? Same way, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Depending on where they're working, it's a superior situation. But it doesn't make the soul superior. So the point is whatever conditioning we have, we engage that position in Krishna's service. That's the equality amongst devotees. In the engagement, not in what they do. That's a very, very coarse understanding that, no, exact same opportunities to perform activities, that's what it is. No, it's to be engaged in activities according to nature. Does that make sense? It's just like, okay, you have the horse, right? And the horse then, you know, takes the cart and does things like that for Krishna, right? The dog, you know, then protects the place and keeps away things that you don't want. The cat catches the mice. Right? Does that make sense? So, they can all be engaged, but what they're doing is different. You can't expect that the cat's going to pull the cart or the horse is going to chase the mouse around. Right? Does that make sense? So that's then how it works. Does that make sense? So according to the nature, you engage yourself. That's what we're saying, this modern kind of context. No, everybody has to have the same opportunities. But notice the same opportunities are only ones that we would consider materially successful. Right? It's not other activities. Yeah, it's not an opportunity. Yeah, it's seen. But previously it was considered an opportunity. In other words, you went out, got yourself a first job, you started off delivering papers or, you know, different things like that. You work your way up. Does that make sense? Yes.
The term Brahminical culture,
yes,
Brahminical society,
yes,
is somewhat scary, because if I'm not a Brahmana by nature, means I don't fit. And then I'm trying really hard to become a Brahmana, but I'm not, you know. At one point I have to accept that. So it's like I have no place in that society. So how can we reconcile this?
Yeah, so Brahminical culture here means that it's a culture based on realizing Brahman. Right? So it's a culture based on self-realization. So that means then Brahminical culture, then if we see it in its actual state, you know, we're talking about, so that means it's then based on Daiva. So Daiva Varnashram is Brahminical culture. The other you can call Brahminical culture, but that's what it's for. People may follow it and not actually see it from the Brahminical standpoint. So Brahminical is not the particular external duties that one's doing. It's Brahminical means is the understanding of why you're doing it. That's what all these duties are for. So in the slow path, the Shudra is a serving, ideally Brahmins, and then by that attachment and all that, they move in that direction. They develop those qualities, take birth then in that situation, and then move forward from there. But the devotional means that then you see everything in relation to Krishna. So whatever your position, then being engaged in the service of Brahman, that's Brahminical. So if you take it that the ashrams, they're Brahminical no matter how you look at it. So now it's just a matter of taking that understanding that is there in the ashram, being engaged in Krishna's service, and applying that in the varnas. Then they also become, you know, from our perspective, Brahminical culture. Because they are anyway. That's how they're supposed to be used. You know, it's like Yudhishthira Maharaj, because of his devotion and everything like that. Then he's acting as a king, perfectly running his kingdom. But at the same time, he's following Brahminical culture. Does that make sense? Mm. Yes.
So actually the Brahminical culture in that society, it's like for a Shudra, Vaishya and Kshatriya, the goals are different than realizing the Brahman. For the Brahman, it's actually realizing the Brahman.
Yes.
That's why, because the goal is oriented towards the Supreme.
Right.
That's what it makes a Brahmanical culture.
Right. Yes, so, go ahead.
And then, actually it's the duty of a Brahmana to see all the other three in connection back to their activities in connection back to Brahman, whether the others see or not.
Right, yes, yes.
But now what happens is they be having a higher position.
They see it separate. They become a separatist, like it was mentioned before. Separate existences and all these things. That's where the problem comes in. So when they see it like that, they'll explain it like that, then people will start to practice it like that. But when they make it as a separate, just for their own position, then that's where the problem comes up. So that's not Vedic culture. Vedic culture is the Brahminical culture. Like that. And just seeing it for the position, you know, distinction, adoration, and profit, that's not Vedic culture. You may be using the form of the Vedic culture, but it's not Vedic culture. Does that make sense?
So, Maharaj, it's the duty of the Brahmin to teach other people.
Yes, it's the duty of the Brahmin to teach. So that's why their position is considered the highest, because then you get the perspective on how one should perform one's activities.
And the way Krishna likes the Brahmin.
Yes. Because then Krishna likes the Brahmins because of that they direct the society towards Krishna. You know, or at least towards the Jnana Yoga. You know, or proper performance of Karma Yoga. And tells them to avoid lower than that. You know, the sinful irreligious activity. So here, irreligious means it's not based on Shastra. So we just say, oh, but in the society nowadays, no one follows, so we can't follow. That's irreligious. It's not based on Shastra. Right? Because we're taking it simply the external form is all there is. What about the internal form? Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you're out, you're traveling, you got a 5-hour drive, you get in the car with the others and you drive, you know, you're going to stop now and again for petrol, you go to the bathroom, this and that. So you have your shoes, you're this or that, you're going to the bathroom. You're not going to take off your shoes and socks and wash your feet. You know, you're just going to walk around and all that and like that. You know, because that's what's there. But you're considering that, you know, you're being Krishna conscious, so it works. But when you get home, now you take off your shoes and socks and then wash your feet. You know, so that's how it works. But if it's like, oh, we're just fitting in, so we don't wash there, we don't wash at home, that's not actually understanding of the culture. Then we're not seeing. So you have to see it in connection. Yeah, in these situations you don't. So it's either all situations we take off our shoes and socks, or no situations we take off our shoes and socks. So it's like, why can't we distinguish? Because being able to distinguish between one situation and another, that's intelligence. So what's being propagated in the contemporary social ideal is no intelligence. You can't distinguish, you can't tell the difference, everything's the same. How is that intelligent? Isn't that where children start? They don't know the difference, and then you train them to tell the difference. And then when you get trained up, now you go back to it's the same. Yeah, so that's the problem.
But that's what they do. You know, you get educated, then you go to work, and what they say, forget everything you've been learned.
Yeah, like that. The door of no door. Learn it all, forget it all. Yeah, so that's the problem, is that these activities that aren't based on Dharma, they're never going to get the result that you say they're going to get. You can say, no, but if everybody's like this, it'll be so fat. Where is it? Where is it?
Hope.
Yeah, it's a hope, but it's not there. It's a hope you have that everything will be fabulous for yourself. It's not for that it'll be fabulous for everybody. If everybody's nice, then I'll feel so comfortable. That if everybody's nice, then everybody will be comfortable. Right? You know, so that's the... I mean, granted, the person in the picture on the yoga wall, you know, with the wings and the daffodil halo and all that kind of jazz, then they may be thinking about everybody like this. But other than them, then no one else is. The person at the reception of the yoga studio is sitting there because they get paid. The person who's giving the classes and all that is doing it because you're paying them. Because you have to remember is that are you going to go to the yoga studio if it's in some funky area of town? No?
No.
You can't park your car there. You come back, there won't be any tires. You know, like that. So you have to be in a nice part of town. Nice part of town means high rent. High rent means you got to pay that. Means these people have to pay a lot of money. So in other words, everybody's nice in the yoga studio because people will pay for niceness. So that's the problem. So it doesn't exist. So if you follow the Vedic rules, then it exists. So even somebody's a very simple person, simple villager, they don't have much, it, still you'll find the same quality of reception, of hosting, that you will anywhere else. It doesn't matter. The mood between the poor person in the village and the rich person in the city are the same in mood. Facility is different, but the mood is exactly the same. So there's a consistency. Therefore, they can interact with each other because the culture is the same. That's the whole advantage of Brahminical culture. It's one culture. There may be different facilities, different occupations, but the culture is one. So that's where the oneness is, in the culture, not in the facilities. Because if you're going to do facilities in same en masse, then you have to be dealing with Shudras. Because they're the only ones that have the same. And even then, they'll never have the same.
Like that. So, Maharaj, you see that Brahminical society is based on understanding of Brahma. So how can we expect that those Sudras or Vaishyas can understand Brahma?
It's by explaining, because the point is the soul can understand. On the material platform, maybe not. So we're not expecting to be jnanis, but bhakti they can understand. So even we're discussing jnana yoga, it's still in connection with bhakti. Then there's a benefit. And even those who could understand the jnana aspect, unless you give bhakti, what's the point? You've given them some more knowledge? Okay, great. Whoopee. So, yeah.
Means everybody can take the bhakti.
Everybody can take the bhakti, so it doesn't matter. That's why you see, in the society, you have people coming from all ranges of society. Because the soul is not dependent upon the body for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's the uniqueness of it. That's the special. Good?
Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema ki.